I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided, a whirlwind week for conservative activist Scott Pressler, who's been crisscrossing the state of Washington. His final stops today. Plus, is the city of Seattle finally admitting just how dire its police staffing situation is? And perhaps a blow for the failed policy of harm reduction. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided for our final show of the week. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I love to see the action happening in Washington state this week. As you know, conservative activist Scott Pressler has been crisscrossing the state of Washington, and he's here to help gather signatures for an initiative that will require you provide proof that you're a citizen of the United States in order to vote. He was in Spokane last night.
Hey everybody, this is Scott Pressler. I'm here in Spokane, Washington, and we are working tirelessly to get proof of citizenship on the ballot in Washington.
I tell you,
people, they tell me to go to Wisconsin, they tell me to go to Michigan, they tell me to go to a swing state. No, I want to be here in Washington because the people of Washington State.
Love it. Love him, love his hair, love his accent, love the enthusiasm. It's really been cool to see the, they're going crazy over there in Spokane. They love it. Really been cool to see the size of the crowds that he's been able to get to come out, and really all over the state. He's been pretty busy for the last 5 or 6 days and not being paid for it. I thought for sure WaGOP paid him to come out from Pennsylvania. Of course, if you're not familiar with Scott, I'm looking forward to hearing his story because we're going to have him on Sunday's show this week. But, you know, this is someone who just goes out there, does the hard work, is widely credited with helping deliver Pennsylvania to President Donald Trump in 2024. And there's just something about him. I mean, you know, what I think is so great about Scott is he's showing you that anyone can do this. If you're passionate enough about an issue, he's obviously a people person, right? But you can go out and you can do these things. You can go out and register your neighbors to vote. You can go out and collect signatures. And that's really important. And what I like to see with these crowds and their enthusiasm is I don't think we see enough of that from the state, from Republicans in the state of Washington. I think Republicans tend to be less eager to go out and to be part of a civic engagement. And I don't, you know, look, you got your lives. You're not the professional activist that the left has. But there is something to that chant that the left uses so often. When we fight, we win. When we fight, we win. When you go out and you get involved and you partake in the process, you can win. And I think that's what Scott Pressler is trying to show. But I am going to attend his event this evening, 5 p.m. at Elysian Event and Conference Center in Kent. I'm not speaking or anything. I'm just going to go as a citizen and watch Scott speak. And I haven't signed the initiative yet to require voter ID. So I'm going to go ahead and sign that initiative while I'm there. And I would love to see you there. Nicole and I will be there. So if you want to see Scott, if you want to say hi to us, we'll see you at Elysian Event and Conference Center this afternoon, this evening, 5 p.m. in Kent. So good opportunity to do that and get involved. If you haven't gotten involved, this is a really easy way and I think a fun way to do it. And as I mentioned, Scott Pressler is going to be joining me right here on Undivided on Sundays with subscribers this week. So if you're not a subscriber, sign up. And you know what? I'll tease this. We're going to get his hair tips and maybe I'll even give you a tip or two on my luscious locks. I've never had anyone with nicer hair than me on the Sunday show. So this will be a first. So if you want to sign up to become a subscriber, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And while we're at it, Scott Pressler is not going to be there, but I will be in Issaquah this Sunday for an event for the Let's Go Washington initiatives. We're going to have a Super Signer rally at Cougar Mountain Middle School at their gymnasium there in Issaquah, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Again, that's this Sunday. So we're going to have available to sign the Initiative for Parental Rights, which is an effort to redo what the legislature undid last year. And then we're also going to have the initiatives there to sign to help protect girls' sports. So both of those on Sunday in Issaquah. I would love to see you there. Brian Haywood will be there with Let's Go Washington. So Good stuff. All right. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in the city of Seattle. I expect that public safety is going to get worse. I expect that police staffing is going to get worse because police don't want to work for a socialist mayor. I wouldn't want to work for a socialist mayor either. I wouldn't want to work for someone who 5 years ago was saying that she thinks the city should move toward a future without the Seattle Police Department. So she wasn't just someone in favor of police defunding. Katie Wilson, the new socialist mayor, was in favor of police abolition, which of course is asinine. The idea that, oh, what a nice thought. What a fairy tale land she lives in, that she thinks we can move toward a future without the Seattle Police Department. And of course, when she was running for mayor, she backed away from some of those statements. And it's hard to know, is that authentic or is that something that she's doing and was doing to try to appeal to more people because police defunding and abolition was such a failed experiment? And now, of course, she has her own SPD security detail. So that's hypocritical. But we know, right? That the Seattle police staffing issue is abysmal. And they'll come out and they'll say, oh, we hired X amount of new officers this year. And then when you look into the fine print and the dirty details between how many officers have left, have retired versus how many they hired, it will either even out, or maybe I think they had one net new officer last year, but they'll make it seem like such a big deal. But the Seattle Police Department, maybe for the first time in writing in black and white, is acknowledging how bad its staffing crisis is. So this document was obtained by our friend Ari Hoffman. He said, in a document used to justify surveillance cameras in Seattle, the city is finally admitting to losing over 700 officers since 2019. Publicly, the city has never admitted the accurate numbers and downplayed the union's numbers, which have always reflected losing 700 officers. And the reason the city is coming out and admitting it in this document is this is a document basically trying to justify the purchase of new surveillance technology. I don't think it's specifically the flock camera system, but something similar to that. And in their justification, they say this: the city's police staffing crisis, now in its fourth year, has resulted in over 700 officers departing SPD since 2019. There it is, for all the denials of how bad things actually were. There it is in black and white. As of January 2024, 913 police officers are available for deployment in the city, the lowest number of in-service officers since 1991, and significantly below per capita staffing relative to comparative jurisdictions. Low staffing levels also affect investigations, which hinders police effectiveness in solving cases and holding violent criminals accountable. Lowest police staffing the city has had since 1991 in terms of deployable officers. For a city our size, we should have around 1,500 officers. I would argue more, but if we're doing comparatively speaking, we should have around 1,500 deployable officers. We have 913. And police staffing that low leads to egregious amounts of overtime, but it also leads to lower 911 response times, even for level one emergencies. So if there's a violent crime in progress, the amount of time it takes police to get there is absolutely unacceptable. And so they're saying that, hey, if we can purchase some of this new technology, then we can have eyes and ears in places where the police aren't able to be right now because of the staffing crisis. I also think it's interesting that they're acknowledging in this document some of the crime issues that we've been arguing are of a serious reality in certain areas of the city that city leadership always tries to downplay, like the concentrations of crime at 3rd and Pine and in the Chinatown International District, Little Saigon. We always talk about how bad those areas are and the type of horrific crimes that are happening there. And out loud, city leadership wants to downplay it. But in here, where they're asking for money for a new surveillance system, they're like, oh yeah, things are horrible. It says gun violence, human trafficking, and other persistent felony crimes are concentrated at specific geographic places, and long-time efforts to prevent these crimes have not been consistently successful, you think? Implementing technology tools to bolster policing capabilities as one part of a holistic crime prevention and reduction plan is essential to address ongoing gun violence, vehicle theft, human trafficking, and persistent felony crimes at specific places, including within our most victimized communities. And then they get into some of the concerns about that you always have with this kind of technology, privacy concerns, and how they'll try to utilize the camera systems in a way that are only facing public areas, not looking into windows, etc. And that's always going to be an issue. And look, I have my concerns with police surveillance technology and living in a surveillance state, but I do think that, you know, we can have those conversations. How do you limit it? But when you have a city the size of Seattle that only has 913 deployable officers, that's a crisis situation. It's a crisis situation. And we do have some of these hotspots. It's like you could really saturate kind of three specific areas of the city. And if you could maintain that level of saturation and police presence for a consistent period of time, I think we'd get a lot of the major offenders off the street. But as I've also said, and I just said it on the show yesterday, you could have a million Seattle police officers, one on every single corner in the city, and it wouldn't, and it could have a million cameras, one on every single corner in the city. And it wouldn't matter if you're not actually going to follow through and prosecute the offenses and put people who are dangerous and who victimize other law-abiding citizens in prison. None of that matters. And unfortunately, that's not helping either. So this is just a small part of the equation. But never again can they deny the extent of the staffing crisis. Never again can they deny the extent of the violent crime that's happening in some of these hot spots in the city, because they put it in writing and we now have it. So thanks, Ari Hoffman, for putting that out. Now, one positive thing I want to talk about that's happening in the city of Seattle, and maybe it's the effort. So Sarah Nelson, who's the city council president, she lost her bid for reelection, which is such a damn shame. So she's out. Ann Davison, the city attorney, is out. She's going to be replaced by an activist. So there are a lot of things stacking up that, on top of the socialist new mayor who was a police abolitionist, that are just not, they're not going to add up well for public safety in the city of Seattle. So maybe some of the more sane members of the city council are trying to push some sane things through before things really get cuckoo crazy. So this just out this morning, the Seattle City Council passes its 2026 budget, and they put out a summary of what's included in it. And there is a lot in this budget that's dedicated to public safety. And I think that's a good thing. Although when you get into some of the details of it, so police hiring, expanding mental health crisis response, this one, stuff like this, it's just like, what are you guys doing? Increase the representation of women in the department. Well, it's $250,000 to support the department's 30 by 30 work group and hire an advisor to coordinate programs consistent with SPD's 30 by 30 initiative. The initiative seeks to increase the number of women in the department to 30% by 2030. Who, cover your kids' ears, but not, who gives an F? I'm a woman. I genuinely do not care. And I'm just gonna say it. God, no, I'm not gonna say it. I'm not gonna say it. I'm gonna say, if my life is in danger, who do I want responding? I would argue probably a man. But there are a lot of wonderful female police officers who are perfectly capable of doing the job. I just, at this point in the city's staffing crisis, genuinely do not care what the department looks like, the color of the skin of police officers, what's going on under their shirts or in their pants. Genuinely don't care. And the fact that in this budget situation, which is already very, very tight, at a time when you acknowledge we have a police staffing crisis and a crime crisis, that you're going to spend $275,000 on an advisor to coordinate a work group to try to get more chicks on the Seattle Police Department. God, that's stupid. The level of stupid just continues to amaze me. But that aside, there's a lot of stuff in there for actual public safety needs, and that is not one of them. But there's something really great that happened, and it's kind of small, and I don't think it'll get a lot of news coverage, but there's something really great that happened in this budget. So, of course, part of the budget process is introducing a ton of different amendments to the budget. So that process has been ongoing. And last Friday, there was a meeting where some of these amendments were being introduced and voted on and discussed. One of them came from outgoing Seattle City Council President Sarah Nelson, and it had to do with limiting the amount of taxpayer money that is spent on failed harm reduction.
This is a proviso designed to preclude any city support for the distribution, for the purchase or distribution of supplies for the consumption of illegal drugs, with the exception of needles.
Thank you very much. So first, let me say that I 100% support needle exchange programs because they reduce the harm of transmitting disease like HIV and hepatitis C. But I fail to see, however, the harm that's being reduced by distributing supplies such as pipes and foil that are used to consume deadly drugs like meth and fentanyl. There were 570 deaths, overdose deaths in Seattle last year, and 1,047 in King County overdose deaths. And for perspective, a total of 153 people died on our roads in the county in 2024. So I, you know, it's absolutely shocking to me that I think it would probably be shocking to our constituents if they knew that we are using public resources to help people get high by distributing pipes, foil with instructions on how to make it round and kind of make it a pipe. This is like, it feels like it's giving a loaded gun to somebody who's suicidal. And it sends a confusing signal to our constituents, because we are also spending a lot of money on overdose prevention and substance use disorder treatment, which I fully support, of course, and I think that I've led on. But just distributing these supplies runs counter to those efforts and is also, I think, cruel.
Cruel. Couldn't agree more. She said, akin to giving someone who's suicidal a loaded gun. And guess what? That passed. That amendment was adopted in the 2026 budget. Now, I disagree with her on the needle aspect of it. All those needles all over our parks and city sidewalks and all of these things given to these drug addicts by the government. I don't really differentiate between a pipe and a needle. I understand there's some concern there. You're like, oh, they're going to pass these diseases to one another by reusing used needles. Well, yeah, they're also going to kill themselves by injecting fentanyl into their veins. So does it really matter if they have some sort of disease, if they're dead from the fentanyl that they used with the needle you gave them? So I disagree, but this is better than nothing. And it's really significant. I mean, in terms of harm reduction, this idea, Seattle has really been ground zero for that. And the fact that they were able to get that into the 2026 budget, that, hey, we're not going to continue to use taxpayer money to help people kill themselves. I don't think that's getting enough attention. That is a very significant thing for the city of Seattle to back away from and walk away from, maybe made easier by the fact that Seattle, like many blue areas, is dealing with a self-inflicted budget crisis. So they can kind of say, hey, we can save some money by not doing this. But our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle, she has been up and down, left and right to anyone who will listen about these drug kits. And she's done so many stories holding up just what Sarah Nelson did. This with the face of Martin Luther King Jr. on it. I mean, which, God, I'm sure his family just loved for his legacy to be his face on a drug kit given out to people by Seattle and King County. Absolutely insane. And Andrea Suarez, I think, was the first one to really show people, look what's in these kits that we're handing out. They even cut the foil into nice little squares. You don't even have to cut the foil if you're a drug abuser. Nope, they've cut the foil for you. They just, like, they're packing a lunch for a kid. Here's your foil in there. Get everything you need all packed away. Here it is. Go kill yourself with fentanyl. Criminal. It should be criminal to use taxpayer money to that end. And so if that's the last thing Sarah Nelson does as city council president, love that, because she's been pushing it back against that for a long time. So other stuff in the budget, like $250,000 to help hire more chicks on the Seattle Police Department, stupid. But this thing in the budget, very, very good. Very happy about that. All right. And we'll be talking a ton. We're going to have Mike Solon, the president of the Seattle Police Union, on the show next week. We're going to be talking to him about what he expects will happen as soon as Katie Wilson becomes officially the mayor of Seattle. Are we going to see another wave of an exodus of Seattle police officers? My gut tells me yes. I wouldn't work for her if I were a cop. Absolutely not, under no circumstances. So we'll be talking more about that next week. All right, coming up next, speaking of budgets, remember yesterday I was ranting about the phrase balanced budget? when all you do is use taxes to make your budget balance? Well, King County just did that. We'll discuss. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They can help you on an individual basis. And that's really, I think, one of the advantages of being a member of RHA is there's always new laws and regulations. I mean, rent control just took effect. And so being able to navigate that, especially if you're someone who just has a unit or two that you're renting, that can be incredibly complicated. But they're experts at it. They can make sure that you're doing everything that you need to do and have the proper documents and all of that. And then also they're down in Olympia advocating on your behalf. So as soon as the legislative session begins, they're down there trying to stop some of these bad policies from being passed in the first place. So become a member of RHA today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, let's keep up on the budget theme today. I got a bunch of stories on the budget and taxation and just never ending. So King County passed a $20 billion budget, a lot of it centering around the issue of housing, modest property tax increase, this from My Northwest. The King County Council unanimously approved a two-year, $20 billion budget on Tuesday that expands investments in housing, public safety, and behavioral health while bracing for potential federal funding cuts. The spending plan pays for core county operations, including Metro buses, sewage treatment, jails, courts, and drug treatment programs. It also raises the countywide property tax levy from 10 cents to 15 cents per $1,000 of assessed value. So to give you an idea, if you have the median home price is value is $850,000. So that means that you'd have an annual increase from about $85 to $127, which I'm sorry, again, is quite significant. They'll always say, oh, it's just $40 or whatever it is. Then it's $50 from that and $100 from that and $1,000 from that. So yes, they passed a balanced budget, but they passed a balanced budget like everyone does in blue areas by just increasing taxes and then patting themselves on the back. So Reagan Dunn on the King County Council, who is a Republican who typically pushes back against tax increases as he did in this case, he eventually voted for the budget, but that doesn't mean he's happy with all of us. He joins us today to talk about it. Reagan Dunn, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, first, I was ranting on the show yesterday. I hate the phrase balanced budget. Hate it. Because it's like if you gave me a bunch of new tax revenue, I could balance the budget. I could balance any budget.
I could make my household budget work really well if people gave me $1 million a year. I'll tell you that.
I know, right? I mean, you praised this budget, but didn't they just raise property taxes?
Yeah, so, you know, I praise Rod Dombrowski for landing the plane, which is he had a $150 million budget shortfall and found a way to fix it. And yes, it's balanced, which is better than what they're doing in Congress. But there was a bunch of tax votes that we took. Of course, I voted against all those new taxes. And that's really how they balanced the budget. They didn't cut at all. They raised revenue in a bunch of different areas, doing the old trick, which is you hold certain critical services hostage, mm-hmm. like criminal justice. But at the end of the day, there was more money for prosecutors, was more money for sheriffs, was more money for courts. And so, I think it was adequate enough for me to ultimately support it.
Your council colleague, Girmay Zahalai, is going to be the new King County executive. Not my choice. I've met the man. I think he's a nice individual, a little too far left for my liking. What can you tell people who are worried about the direction that he'll take the county?
Well, we should continue to hold Girmay Zahalai accountable for running a good government. And, Girmay is a nice guy. He does try and work across the aisle. And that's an important start, but he's going to have policies that are going to be far left of center, and I suspect a lot more revenue. And so, I'm optimistic. I'm encouraged, that we have new leadership. I think that Dow, after 16 years, was just, not minding the store and really let everybody get away with everything. I think new management will be at least a step in the positive direction, but, understand Girmay's going to want more taxes. He's going to fund priorities that are left of center and things like housing first and all of the kinds of drug enabling programs that I've talked about publicly on these programs as not being helpful to the community and a lot of other things. So there'll be a lot of battles to come.
Well, and it's going to be, people are talking a lot about Katie Wilson and the socialist in the mayor's office, but now we got a dynamic duo, and I'm not calling Girmay a socialist, but he does, you enumerated them there. A lot of the policies that mainstream Democrats support, I've been saying on the show, are socialist policies. I mean, we're talking about free stuff for everyone and raise taxes to do it. You know, one question I have, and you work with him very closely, I know you can give me a kind of reasoned answer to this. He was anti-police in 2020. I mean, I don't think he went as far as to say abolish the police, but he was in favor certainly of divesting money from law enforcement. We know Katie Wilson. She was in favor of abolishing the Seattle Police Department. Now she gets her SPD security detail. Do you believe that Girmay has walked away from that? Because he suggested that he has. Do you believe that to be true?
Yeah, I think so. I think what happens is these rookies get elected who have never served in public office, making all these wild ideological promises. And then they get into government frequently and realize, wait a minute. That wasn't realistic. We have to govern, and you know, there's a police department to fund. Those are real people. There's people out there raping and murdering. We've got to stop that. I think people often come to the center once they realize the realities of governing to a huge population of people. Katie Wilson's going to be interesting because she has zero elected experience. Girmay is more experienced and seasoned. I've seen him tack to the center. This is a guy who's 38 who has among the three or four most important elected offices in Washington State. I guarantee you his team around him doesn't want the county executive to be his last stop in public office, that perhaps there's a national influence. And so we'll see. You want to get elected statewide. You cannot just pound downtown Seattle policies because every mayor of Seattle that's run for statewide office has lost. So yeah. I think there's some political realities that'll keep at least Girmay centered, hopefully in, you know, it'll be liberal, but in a good government theme, which might be better than we've had lately.
Yeah, let's hope so. I think that's wishful thinking. But again, you know, Dow Constantine, the former King County executive, he ended up just being a self-serving a-hole, really, and then he failed up. And so I think Girmay cares about service. Is it service in the way that we'd prefer it? Probably not. But definitely needs to be held accountable for, you know, runaway taxes. We need to make sure that he, you know, he's walked away from this idea of police defunding at a time when we're dealing with a real crime crisis and quality of living crisis. To go back to that would be a major mistake. So just some of the things that will be facing the new King County executive and that we'll be looking at as well. But then you got the duo, a lot of tension around Katie Wilson, the socialist in Seattle. But then you got someone who's socialist light, Girmay Zahalai. And so, man, if you live in King County, get ready to open up your wallet because you're going to be paying up the you-know-what for the next 4 years. All right. Coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable. We're going to keep on the budget theme. Let's just keep talking about budget stuff because you already know how messed up the budget situation is at a state level. I mean, the latest budget forecast said another $66 million short compared to the last forecast. Guess who? I'll give you one guess. Guess who Democrats are blaming for this situation? Ah, yes. Orange Man Bad, we'll discuss. First, with talk of an AI bubble, are you concerned with the risk exposure of your retirement portfolio? It would be perfectly understandable for you to have some questions about that. Today, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is having his final free live webinar of the year. It's his review preview live webinar. It's today at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. So you still have time to sign up. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. He's going to be talking about the impact AI is having on the market, doing a preview for 2026, talking about how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free November 20th webinar. Again, that's today, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. So you can do that at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Maybe you can't make it. That's all right. You can also schedule your own personal free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And while you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Ah, yes, a decade-long budget crisis led by the Democratic majority in Washington State, but it's Donald Trump's fault. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. And why not blame it on Donald Trump? They blame everything on Donald Trump, and what has it done? It got Bob Ferguson the governor's office. It got Nick Brown the attorney general's office. It's led to near supermajorities in the House and Senate for Democrats. And they got there blaming Donald Trump for everything under the sun as a way to distract from all their many failures. So why wouldn't they keep doing it? Man, it works. As long as it works, they'll keep doing it. If I was a Democratic strategist, I would encourage them to continue to do it as well. And so we already know that they're going to increase taxes again after the largest tax increase in state history. They're going to do it again this year because they're slowly preparing us for that eventuality. You know, these budget revenue forecasts keep coming out that things are dire. We're collecting less revenue because we've scared businesses away and we've scared builders and developers away. But they have to find a way. It doesn't even have to really be that convincing because the vote blue, no matter who, TDS anti-Trump crowd will believe anything. So they are already laying the groundwork to say, hey, you know, we're going to do an income tax or whatever it is, and it's Donald Trump's fault. And then there's this huge swath of voters in our state that will be like, oh, well, Donald Trump did this to us. I guess we don't have a choice and we can just be mad at Donald Trump. So House Speaker Lori Jenkins wrote an op-ed in the Olympia, and the headline, the Republican federal budget bill has devastated Washington families. So basically saying that because of the Affordable Care Act subsidies or the gutting of that funding, as she calls it, Washingtonians are just going to be suffering because of H.R. 1. Washingtonians will see their health care cut while state government is required to spend more of your tax dollars to implement new red tape the bill imposes on Medicaid and food assistance. Yeah, red tape just saying, hey, you've got to prove that you qualify. Wow, so much red tape. Going to be so expensive for the state to implement that red tape. She says Republicans own this mess and they could fix it if they wanted to. In D.C., Trump Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the presidency. She goes on to say, in this Washington, Democrats control the legislature and will focus this coming session on minimizing harm from H.R. 1. It won't be possible to undo all the damage Trump Republicans are doing to health care, food assistance, clean energy, and more. We hope legislative Republicans will join us in protecting Washington State and pushing back on the most damaging decisions coming from the White House and Congress. First of all, this is such a fear-mongering tactic because they don't need help from House Republicans on anything. They can do literally anything they want, pass anything they want without a single vote from a House Republican because they have such huge majorities. So this is just their way to tie Washington State Republicans to the mean orange man, bad politics of MAGA Republicans in Congress. So it's another fear-mongering tactic. But I have to laugh when she says, we hope legislative Republicans will join us in protecting Washingtonians. They tried to protect Washingtonians from you this past session and from the many, 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 many tax increases and fee increases that you shoved down the throats of Washingtonians in a single year. Shall I list some of them? B&O tax increase, property tax increase, gas tax increase, sales tax increase, death tax increase, reparations free increase, capital gains tax increase, wealth tax increase, excise tax, precious metals tax, Zinn tax, sporting events tax, firearm permit fee increase, hunting fishing increase, craft beer tax, glass bottle discovery, PFAS tax, blah, blah. And Trump is the one hurting Washingtonians. I've got it. Gosh, that's so weird because here I thought, you know, you guys just passed the largest tax increase in state history and taxed the joy out of virtually everything in life for Washington residents. But it's the orange man who's bad. Speaking of some of those tax and fee increases, I mentioned one of them is the Discover Pass. They increase the cost of buying a Discover Pass, which gets you access to some wonderful aspects of the great outdoors in Washington State. And not a surprise, fewer people are now buying them. Discover Pass sales dip after price increase, according to the Washington State Standard. Sales of Washington's pass to access state parks and other recreation areas fell after an October 1st price hike. It says figures presented to the State Parks and Recreation Commission on Wednesday show a 23% drop in the number of annual Discover Pass sales in October compared to last year. However, revenue from the passes climbed 16% year over year. So they say that despite the fact that 23% fewer people are now buying it, they're still going to collect more money because of the amount that they increased. So I think they increased the cost 50%. So you'd have to see a pretty significant drop in the number of people who are purchasing Discover passes in order to see a drop in revenue. But still, this is a party that says that they, like, you know, want to help the poor and the working class, that they're all about working people. Yet you've robbed them of this simple joy. And so fewer people are able to access these outdoor areas. And you did that. So people who have more disposable income, wealthier people, dare I say, they can continue to access these wonderful areas, but the working poor can't. And you did that to them. And you'll still, like, claim that you're the party that's looking out for the working class and the poor, but all these other taxes and fees, like on some of the things, you know, they added additional fees to attend a sporting event with your family. They made it more expensive to rent a place to go on vacation with your family. All those sorts of things, even the Zin tax, those are not hurting rich people with disposable income. And they complain and complain about regressive taxes. Oh, these taxes are regressive in the sense that for, you know, depending on if you're, you know, middle class or rich, you're paying the same, like, tax, like the gas tax, 6 cents per gallon increase in the gas tax. Well, that 6 cents per gallon matters a lot less to someone who's making a lot of money than it does to a working class person. So they call it regressive. And that is true. But then they just keep shoving regressive taxes down your throats and adding new regressive taxes and fees. So they don't actually care. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And it's all Donald Trump's fault, of course. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, with the cost of a Discover Pass going up $15, will that change whether you purchase one? So now it's, I think, because it was $30 before, right? So now it's $45. So does that change whether you're willing or are going to purchase one, Nicole?
Well, it's actually funny. We didn't talk about this, but I just renewed my tabs. Mm-hmm. Last week, mm-hmm. and I did not get the Discover Pass
because it's
because
more expensive.
I was like, $45. I don't need that.
Yeah,
I don't use it enough.
Did you used to get one though?
I got one last year.
So you got
but
one
I
last
used
year. So
it
is a
once.
Change for you. So it does change
because
for you.
I used it once last year, and yeah. I was like, that's not worth $45 to me.
No,
last year I was like $30. I might use it a couple times, then it's worth it. $45? No. Not
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Lori says, I never bought a Discover Pass. I doubt I ever will. Ollie Rohde, we made sure to buy one before the price went up. It will be the last one as we're moving out of state next year. Washington is in trouble. We don't want any part of it. Don't leave us. I know. It just makes me so sad.
I also think that might kind of adjust their estimates because they said there was this big spike the month mm-hmm. before
yep.
the adjustment went into effect. And so that might have thrown off all of their numbers anyway.
Possibly. Yeah, I think we'll need another year to really figure it out. Mm-hmm. Christie's on to something, and I kind of feel this way too. I will not buy one, and they won't be able to keep me off the public lands. There's not enough of them to be everywhere, especially because they keep cutting. So fun, keep increasing the taxes and continue counting services. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Rick, yes, I won't buy one automatically, though, as I have in the past. I'll just buy one when I have a specific plan to use it. And that's fair, too.
And can
you can
do
that?
You can rent them from the library.
Get like a day pass, right? Yeah. That's interesting.
You can
rent
no,
them
you
from
can
the
just
library.
Check it out from the library for free.
For free?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
That, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Hannah says that. You can check them out at most public libraries. I had no idea. Why uh-huh. would you buy one? Well, it's kind of a pain to have to go to a public library.
It's a little
I check
bit of
a pain
and maybe they don't always
yeah.
have them.
Average Joe says, not buying one anyway. The fact that I have to pay to park and I have a big chance of getting my car broken into to access lands we pay for already is bogus at best. This is another example of government overtaxation. Where is the Tea Party for garbage like this? And I totally agree with that sentiment. Like, how often do they warn about how dangerous the trailheads are? And then you see the disgusting bathrooms that they're not mm-hmm. even keeping up. Absolutely gross. Can't even go into any of them. And then the overflowing, smelly garbages. And you're like, what am I paying for? And it's government land anyway. It is quite ridiculous. It really is. So most of you are saying, though, that this won't change your habits. But for some of you, it's because you weren't buying one anyway. Maybe you were. Breaking the law, which in this case, I'm okay with. Honestly, I'm fine with it. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next, including a difficult conversation about whether all legal immigration is really good. migration. I'll discuss that with my sister on Florida Report. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have just been awarded for the third year in a row the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest. And they do a whole hell of a lot more than just roofing. In fact, this time of year, a great service they offer is custom holiday lighting. Isn't that nice? Take the stress off putting the lights up yourself. Don't worry about tumbling off a massive ladder. Let the pros do it instead. They also, in addition to obviously new roofs, they do gutter insulation and cleaning, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning that you can get done as well any time of year. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. And if you do need a new roof, first they'll come over and inspect it. Maybe you have a leak that can just be repaired. They won't push you into a new roof, but they do have flexible financing options, including zero down, 0% interest. So taking care of your home has never been easier. In fact, they're about to come over to our place and clean our roof and clean out our gutters after all those leaves came down. So schedule your free estimate, 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING, and please tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. All right, should we get to the Crockett meltdown? Good God. You know, what's so interesting about the Jeffrey Epstein thing, and I haven't talked about it a lot just because we're not a national show, and I think there's just this oversaturation of talk of that story in the national media environment. But first of all, I've said if there was anything tying President Donald Trump to nefarious activity with anything, let alone Jeffrey Epstein, it would have been out by now. Like, there's really nothing left to find out about that man. Democrats have squeezed, have looked every under every rock. What's the metaphor? They got all the juice they can squeeze out of that. So I'm not worried about that. But it was interesting to see Democrats, you know, all of a sudden care about releasing the Epstein files because they believed maybe it would somehow implicate Donald Trump. And then you saw there was some emails that were leaked and they cherry picked a couple emails that mentioned President Trump. But it was really Jeffrey Epstein saying he hated President Trump. So it didn't. I didn't really understand what they were trying to get at. But actually, the release of some of this information from the Epstein files has totally backfired on Democrats. Totally backfires. There's the one member of Congress who was caught texting with Jeffrey Epstein during a congressional hearing where he was basically telling her what she should ask and what she should do. And then there's like, you know, Hakeem Jeffries was outed as his team trying to set up a meeting with Jeffrey Epstein. So it's all just wild. So, of course, Democrats are now in damage control over something that they brought on themselves, So Jasmine Crockett, who's, you know, a new face of the Democratic Party, she's like, oh, well, you're trying to turn this on us. She went on the floor of the House and she started naming names of people who got money from Jeffrey Epstein.
Folks who also took money from somebody named Jeffrey Epstein, as I had my team dig in very quickly. Mitt Romney, the NRCC, Lee Zeldin, George Bush, Win Red, McCain Palin, Rick Lazio. I just want to be clear. If this is the standard that we're going to make, just know we're going to expose it all. And just know that the FEC filings, they are available for everybody to review. This is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, she probably should have reviewed them better because it came out that at least in one of those instances, the Jeffrey Epstein was a doctor named Jeffrey Epstein who donated to someone's campaign after the other Jeffrey Epstein had killed himself. So it wasn't even the right Jeffrey Epstein. So they just typed into FCC, Jeffrey Epstein, didn't even bother to figure out or take a close look at all to figure out if it was actually the Jeffrey Epstein. And even a close look at the date would have been like, well, that can't have been Jeffrey Epstein because he was already dead by then. So she went on CNN and even CNN tried to press her on the misinformation.
You mentioned Lee Zeldin there. He's now a cabinet secretary. He responded and said it was actually Dr. Jeffrey Epstein, who's a doctor that doesn't have any relation to the convicted sex trafficker. Unfortunate for that doctor, but that is who donated to a prior campaign of his. Do you want to correct the record on the people that you...
Listen, I never said that it was that Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh,
just so that people understand, when you make a donation, your picture is not there. And because they decided to spring this on us in real time, I wanted the Republicans to think about what could potentially happen because I knew that they didn't even try to go through the FEC. So my team, what they did is they Googled. And that is specifically why I said a Jeffrey Epstein. Unlike Republicans, I at least don't go out and just tell lies.
I mean, floundering. My team Googled. Yeah, we could tell. They didn't do an awful lot of work there. Let's just keep watching that train wreck.
I literally had maybe 20 minutes before I had to do that debate.
Yeah, but people might see that and say, well, you're trying to make it sound like he took money from
I did not know.
A registered sex offender.
No, but I literally did not know. When you search SEC files,
we
and
know.
That's what I had my team to do, I texted them and I said, listen, we're going up. They are saying that she took donations.
Right, but someone might say, well, your team should have done the homework to make sure it wasn't the convicted
not
sex trafficker.
Within 20 minutes, you could not find that out, not from just doing a quick search on FEC. So, number one, I made sure that I was clear that it was a Jeffrey Epstein, but I never said that it was specifically that Jeffrey Epstein.
Good God. I mean, and this is someone who is like a leader in the Democratic Party. It's really wild. Good for CNN. Although I think she could have been a little harder. Like, you're clearly, you got it wrong. Just say you got it wrong. That's fine. Just say it. But no. Just wild. And there's so much other stuff out there about that. Like just trying to, that Stacey Plaskett, the congresswoman who was the one texting Jeffrey Epstein during the hearing. She's like, first they're trying to blame, well, people text Donald Trump and he's a felon. And then she's saying, oh, he was a constituent. Am I not supposed to text with a constituent? It's just like, and then she was saying she was trying to get information out of him. And I was like, oh my God, they're just really, they should have just shut up. I mean, the Epstein files, I totally agree with their release, but Democrats never wanted to release them for the right reasons. They wanted to release them to get Donald Trump, and now they just got themselves. It's embarrassing. All right, it is Thursday, and there's a lot happening this week in the Sunshine State, so let's get to our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, a lot of big news out of Florida. So let's get right to it. Hello, by the way. Hello.
Hello.
Okay. So the Department of Justice has charged a Florida Congresswoman, Sheila Sherfillis McCormick, with stealing, laundering $5 million in FEMA funds. This is a crazy story. So it had to do with COVID-19. I'll just explain it briefly. So her brother, they worked through their family healthcare company on FEMA-funded COVID-19 vaccination staffing contracts in 2021. Basically didn't do the work, didn't fulfill the contract, pocketed the money. Crazy. I mean, I even see Democrats saying that she needs to be removed from Congress.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the funds that they were allocated, they misappropriated, but they also received an overpayment of $5 million.
Yeah.
And instead of returning those funds, they laundered them through multiple bank accounts, trying to disguise where it came from. And they were used for personal gain, but also like they were donated back to her campaign for Congress back in 2021.
Wild. So. And there's a web here. It also charges her tax preparer, which is like, dang, that he was allegedly complicit in trying to conspiring to file a false federal tax return so they could hide some of this. Like, it's an overpayment. You know it's an overpayment. It's $5 million you weren't supposed to get. And so then they're just, you know, sort of trying to shelter it or whatever it is. So yeah, that is someone who shouldn't be any controversy there, should lose her congressional seat. But maybe she would have anyway if Florida Republicans have their way. So, of course, Prop 50 passed in California, and that is a concerted effort to just gerrymander Republicans out of office in California. But turnabout is fair game. And now in a few days, so December 4th, I think, the Congressional Redistricting Select Committee in Florida is meeting, and they just want to do basically the opposite.
Yeah, they're going to do basically the opposite in the attempt to gain five more House seats in the state of Florida, which would maybe in turn kind of cancel out anything that's happening in California when you get to the national level. But
so messy and stupid and dirty. I don't like it. I don't like any of it. It's all dumb.
Well, I do think in a state like Florida, we have gained, our population has grown exponentially. So I think revisiting the map often when your state is gaining so many people is important, just because, you know, some areas become very populated while others become less populated. You got a lot of people in Miami moving to Tallahassee. Like the population shifts so much that I don't mind them going back and re-looking at the maps. But I do think, like, if there's one thing I remember from high school is gerrymandering is bad, you know?
So it's like, right. It's like the one lesson you take away. There's like 10 things you learn in high school. And that's for some reason one thing we all emerge with. Gerrymander bad.
Yeah, gerrymander bad. The Egyptian pyramids. Like these are like the few things I remember. But, you know, I think approaching it in all honesty is good. But I do think that Florida has had a huge influx of a lot of Republicans. So I almost think no matter which way they draw that map, you're going to probably wind up with additional seats that are just going to happen to be probably Republican regardless. So.
Well, yeah. So the seat thing is a census issue. So that's a different issue altogether. What they're talking about here is the drawing of the lines and how it would, you know, is it going to be a safer red seat, a safer blue seat? But certainly, you know, you've had a lot of, since the pandemic started, a lot of population shift, right?
Yeah.
From one state to the other. So there's going to be significant changes that are a result of that are just fine. That's how it is supposed to work. The bigger your population, the more seats you have in the House. But the issue is, you know, if you look at what California did, I mean, we're talking like the definition of gerrymandering. So, you know, maybe everyone can just do things fairly and ethically, and we can all just move on with our lives, but it's too much to ask for. All right. I knew at some point we were going to have to embark on this topic. So there is definitely a segment of the right that isn't just anti-illegal immigration. They are becoming increasingly anti-immigration in general, even through legal means, but specifically from nations that are just so different from our own that there's this incompatibility. So Ron DeSantis, it was at his alma mater. Is that where he was giving this speech?
Yeah, he was at Yale giving this speech to, you know, they're having their yearly get together of all the
alums
gotcha. And stuff. And so he obviously gave a little speech there.
Yeah. So let's listen to part of it on this topic.
You have some strain on the right that says, oh, no, you know, illegal immigration is bad. Legal immigration, no matter what, is good. And wait a minute. Now, I'm not saying any of it's that it's all bad or what, but is bringing 10 million people from like Somalia and dumping them into Georgia, is that good because it's legal? I think you have to think critically about what are we doing with an immigration policy, and is it benefiting the American people? Is it helping to promote a strong American culture? We should never bring people into this country who hate America. And when I...
Yeah, so, okay, a few things there. I don't think somebody having a different culture means they hate America, right? So I disagree with that. But I do understand the notion that if you're bringing someone from a country that's, you know, morality or just way of life is so fundamentally different from ours, and you're putting them in a place in America, you know, like somewhere like he mentions Georgia, or even, you know, in Minneapolis has a huge Somali population, is that inherently good? I think that's a fair conversation to have.
I think it's an important conversation to have. And I appreciate him bringing it up because I think it is something that people try to skirt around a little bit because we're so focused on illegal immigration. But that doesn't mean, you know, it's like that saying, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
You know, I think there is a certain aspect of that conversation that's very true. You know, you bring people that are coming from a culture so different than ours, and then you expect them to come here and immediately kind of conform to ours, but they end up in populations together. So there's no real reason for them to conform to American ways in general. And so like, is that good for communities that they land in? Probably not. So maybe we have to rethink how we decide to bring people into this country and how we integrate them into our customs and our culture here in America.
Yeah, this is blowing up right now in Dearborn, Michigan, with there's a huge Muslim population and it's causing all this consternation. And I think it's a delicate conversation with the potential to offend a lot of people. I don't think that means it's not worth having. And is there more? Let's play another clip from Governor DeSantis on this.
And I want, when I look at like Mindami's dad, and listening to the stuff he's saying about America being the story, I'm like, why would we have wanted somebody like that to come? I mean, especially if you think America is so bad. So we have to be smart. It's lazy thinking to say anything that's legal must necessarily be good. Some of these companies game these systems with bringing cheap labor. So there's a whole host of things, but don't do what Europe did. Europe did a mass migration that was legal, that was intentional, and it's proven to be disastrous. So as conservatives, we must think more critically.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm open to having the conversation, but I don't know who gets to decide what countries and cultures are, you know, can conform to American values. I think it has more to do with the influx of a, as you pointed out, a huge group into one area where it almost becomes the predominant culture, like the predominant culture being Somali or the predominant religion being Muslim or whatever it is. And it just totally upends a certain area. So tough conversation, but maybe, you know, one we ought to have.
Yeah, some of the most important conversations are hard to have. So it doesn't mean we shouldn't have them. And like DeSantis said, think critically about the topic at hand. So. Yeah.
All right, Miranda, good stuff. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know who gets to decide what culture is compatible with America and what culture is not compatible with America. So it's a slippery slope type situation. But yeah, we'll continue to have that conversation. All right, we'll get to comments from our live stream coming up next. First, I've been encouraging you to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Why? You could be like Christine and save $10,000 a year. $10,000 a year. She said she has really complicated insurance because she's got two businesses. They were adding a third car. And then she hears that her carrier is dissolving. And they're going to drop her in less than 30 days. She's like, what do I do? And then she remembered, oh, Brandy told me to call First Mark Insurance. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. She did that. Did the First Mark Challenge. They talked through her situation, went out, shopped their market of carriers, came back and said, great news, Christine. We can save you $10,000 a year, even though you're also adding a third new vehicle to the policy. Christine's like, thanks for your continual nagging, Brandy, about doing the First Mark Challenge. You're welcome. I aim to serve. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They're always going to have your best interests in mind. All right. Some comments from the live stream on the Scott Pressler events today. And then, of course, he's joining us on Sundays with subscribers. Lil Miss J says, Brandy, my daughter and I still feel like your hair is better. Thank you. But I don't know. I haven't seen him in person yet, so I'll have to see. But I know his is much longer than mine. All right. Ken Roush on the city and its lack of cops. Since Katie wants to abolish the SPD, she shouldn't get a detail of officers. Instead, she should get a detail of social workers trained in de-escalation techniques. I agree. I think if she wants to be morally consistent, that's what she should do. Watermelon Shug, great opportunities for overtime if you're a young officer with no family. Oh, 100%. This is a little hair I've got bouncing around over here. Speaking of my hair, stop it, hair. Yeah, if you're, I'm sure a lot of the officers love the overtime, but there's only so much overtime you can do. And there's a point where it's too dangerous to, for you to work that many shifts because we need you to be on your top of your game. All right, let's see here. Milkman, is Washington still mulling becoming Fetty dealers? So we did a story a couple months back about how there is this proposal to essentially get Washington State into the drug distribution game, where it's like, oh, why not? Why let the black market do it when we could provide, you know, heroin and fentanyl that we know is in the proper proportions and won't be a hotshot and kill someone? As far as we know, that's still a proposal on the table. And if things keep going the way they're going, I bet that they're totally all over it. Diana, make it a real needle exchange. You only get the same number of clean needles in exchange for the dirty ones they bring in. Isn't that what the needle exchanges are? Isn't it a needle for a needle? Or not? Or well, you just get a free needle?
That's what it was supposed to be. I don't know that that's what it is anymore.
Yeah, like they wouldn't give you a clean needle if you didn't bring them a dirty one.
Right.
Yeah, I tend to think you're probably right. But that would prevent all the needles from being all over the parks if you made them bring a needle back and then get a needle mm-hmm. in exchange. But that would just be asking too much, Diana. Mm-hmm. Rob's Pierre, I remember the needles being a problem in Washington and Oregon back in 2011. Used to find piles of them in parks and beaches. Still a problem, still a problem. Mm-hmm. On King County passing a balanced budget and the dual threat of the socialist mayor of Seattle and the very far left King County executive, Andy Stevens says the breweries are going out of business due to expensive socialist policies. Yeah, we had on not a brewery owner, but a distiller, a distiller.
I think somebody just reached out to me, a viewer just reached out to me and said that they were closing some businesses, and I did a little Google, and I believe that might be what it is. And so
yeah.
I don't know, we might, they were breaking that to us, so I don't know. We might have some more news of just that brewery yeah. shutting down.
Yeah. Looking up for Jesus, and after that the state will go after properties. Look what's happening right now in Chicago. People are being taxed out of their homes. on the Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, saying Trump is costing Washingtonian too much. Got it.
That thing made me so mad last night.
I know. Bill Biz, what will Washington politicians do when Trump is no longer in office? They'll say that J.D. Vance is even worse than Donald Trump. Greg, I'll bet President Trump smiles every night before bed knowing he lives rent-free in millions of morons' heads.
Yeah, I don't think he sleeps much.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't sleep much. Chuck, living tax, breathing tax, pooing tax, fun tax, no fun tax. Yeah, they tax everything. On Florida Report, Matthew says there are some cultures and belief systems that are anti-West. The mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, just said he disavows assimilation. Which I'm not saying you have to assimilate fully. Like, keep your cultures, keep the food, keep the celebrations or whatever it is. But I do think there's some merit to overwhelming like a Midwest community with a bunch of people from a third world country that share none of the customs and beliefs. It's weird. Let's see here. Weiscastle. Mom Donnie had the nerve to say NYC is under international law. Yeah, I saw that. Where he said, this is a city of international law, saying, suggesting if there was an international warrant out for Benjamin Netanyahu's arrest, that they would honor it in New York City. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of international law that we don't follow and that U.S. law obviously supersedes. You forget what country you're in, sir. And he's going down to meet with President Trump at the White House. We'll see how that goes.
They don't know anything.
I know. It's really bad.
They're not smart.
I love when people put what is probably your business name as your handle. Very smart. Tri-City Tools Solutions. Every legal immigrant should be vetted individually, not as a culture or country as a whole. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Oh, one more super chat I missed on needle exchanges. Papa Woody, the needle exchange does not work. Well, yeah, I mean, you're still giving something that they're going to use to take illegal drugs that could kill them. So whether it's a clean needle or a dirty needle, I mean, are you really doing them that much of a favor? I don't think so. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check. Speaking of Mom Donnie, his plan for free stuff has already fallen apart and he hasn't even taken office yet. It's really tough for him. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Linda H. did. She said, 5 stars. It was difficult for me to put my trust into a real estate agent only because this was the first home I've sold and I needed it to be handled with care and respect. Interviewed two other agencies. Wes's was the third and last. During our first meeting, I knew it was clear this man knew more about how to position my home for a successful sale than the others. She says, we put our home on the market at one of the worst times of the year. Also, during a slow market, we had expectations of it taking many months. With Wes and his team's expertise, it sold in under a month. Trusting him was easy. Working with him and his team was a great experience. Love to hear it. Go to sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using his free home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, we knew that for Mom Donnie and Katie Wilson, a lot of the free things they promise to voters aren't actually going to come to fruition because free things aren't free. They require money and you have to get that money from somewhere. And even if you're in a deep blue city and you've got city council members that are on your side, you can't always get enough votes to make that happen. And some of the free stuff that Mom Donnie wants in New York State or New York City are really up to the governor of New York. For instance, he sat down and did an interview talking about Governor Kathy Hochul, who's come out and said that she doesn't support a lot of, even though she supported his campaign, doesn't support a lot of his policies, and one of those being what it would take to make public transit and the buses in New York essentially free.
I've heard you talk about many times that you don't want to take money away from the MTA. Mm-hmm. You want to put money back in. It's something that she agrees with, right? We don't want to take away money from the MTA. How are you getting that money, the $700 million to make the buses free, into the MTA if she's not for raising taxes?
You know, I think that the two clearest ways to raise that money is through the raising of the state's corporate tax to match that of New Jersey. I think that a lot of this is still a case to be made, whether it's the corporate tax or that's the personal income tax on those who make more than $1 million a year or more. I think that these are the clearest ways. I've also said that if there are other ways to raise this funding, the most important fact is that we fund it, not the question of how we do it, but that we do it.
Well, it doesn't matter. I don't know. Well, the most important thing is that we do it. It doesn't matter how we do it. No, how you do it is the only thing that matters. It's the only thing that matters. Maybe he'll learn that lesson the hard way. That has been our closing sanity check. A reminder, two opportunities for me to see you in the next couple days. First of all, this evening, I'm going to be in Kent. I'm going to go with, I imagine, a bunch of other people and watch Scott Pressler's final event in Washington State. He's going to be at the Elysian Event and Conference Center, 520 Washington Avenue South in Kent, starting at 5 p.m. I believe it goes until 8 p.m. So you've got an opportunity in that time frame somewhere. I think you can come at any time, really. So that'll happen this evening. And then on Sunday, I am going to be in Issaquah at Cougar Mountain Middle School, Sunday, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. for a super signer rally for the Let's Go Washington initiatives, the one to strengthen parental rights and to protect girls' sports. And so I would love to see you at Cougar Mountain Middle School Gymnasium in Issaquah this Sunday at 1 p.m. All right, that's it. A reminder, Scott Pressler will join us on Sundays with subscribers. So if you'd like to become a subscriber, you can sign up. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We would love to have you be a subscriber. So for some of you, I'll see you this evening. For others, I'll see you Sunday on Sundays with subscribers. For others, I might see you Sunday afternoon in Issaquah. A lot of opportunities to be seeing each other. And then for the rest of you who are totally uncool, I guess I'll just see you Monday back here on the live show. Have a great weekend.